dark fog were from the place where you sat on his knee again.
Yes, and I was being tickled by his beard, I remember. And he asked me to interpret this Bible story about if you were not good, you'd go to a hot climate, and if you were good, you'd go to heaven, and all this sort of thing. So I was telling Claude, and Claude started to talk back to me, and he was arguing, and Mr. Wilson, what did he say? What did he say? But I'd been taught by my parents that you must always answer a grown-up person. You must never be rude or anything. So I thought, well, I'll have to tell him. So I said, Claude said, well, if God is so good, why would he want to see anybody go to hell? And he says he doesn't think that a good God would want to send any person into hell because he knows that he couldn't hurt another person. And if he couldn't hurt a person, he's sure God couldn't hurt a person. Well, that finished it. I was never asked to interpret any more. And Claude was never asked to give his opinions after that. I settled it.
Out of the mouths of babes and suckers, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. But he was a wonderful old man, though. And he believed thoroughly in what he preached, you know. But I've often thought of that story. And anyway, I didn't have to sit on his knee after that.
Do you remember, who besides the Hamiltons were the sort of prominent families in this area down here, the old families?
There were not too many in the old days. There would be the Shaw family.
Well,
when I was here, the Shaws were here.
A little later on.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah, sort of like, there was nobody, of course, that compared with Mr. Bullock on the other end.
That was the other end of the island. Mr. Bullock was really an institution in himself, you know. He was a nice, fine old chap, though. But around here, we hadn't too many people. They came in, though, in, say, 1915, 1920s, so on. I do remember that the... have you got enough from me?
Yes, go ahead.
I remember when the Fullers used to come. They came quite early in the year, and they had a place up on Musgrave Mountain. That's way up, 14 miles up back of us. And Ted Fuller used to call in here with an aunt of his, I believe, Mrs. Roach. And they'd come in here, and he'd bring all his little brothers, and for bread and jam on the way up, you know, and they drove up. He got one of the first Model T Ford cars. And this car, he had quite a lot of trouble getting up Musgrave Mountain because it's very steep. He discovered that if he turned around and went up backwards one day, he could get up. So he went backwards up the hill in this Ford car, and because it was the gas, you see, wouldn't flow going uphill, so he turned around and so he went right up over the hill backwards. And coming down, his brakes failed, so he cut a fir branch, and he used the fir branch for brakes all the way down that blessed mountain. So you see, the old timers, the people that came, they sort of lived dangerously, you might say, around these places. I think, actually, I've told you enough now, because you've had an awful lot.
I'd like to ask you then about, you know, a bit more about the old people around here. What do you remember, for instance, about the hotel down at the end there, and how it got started and so on?
It was there when we came here. That's all I know. And we used to go down for the mail. There were generally some drunks around there. So we just went straight for the mail and got it in the way. We never stayed there. But there were some people living up in the valley, the other side of the church, by the name of Wilson. They had a farm, and...
I think perhaps we had better close the door.
The two of them. He's making... If Claude would take off his boots. So they said to my mother...
Who were these people?
People the name of Wilson, farmers that used to live there, and the Shaws that are living there now bought from them. They looked farm, you see. And they were very nice people, white people. And they told my mother that if we could go down every day or every second day and get a gallon of milk, skim milk. So we used to do that. We had a cow, but we could always, so many children, we could always use the extra milk. And they had a beautiful garden, lovely flowers, I remember. They used to give us flowers in there, and we'd go in, and perhaps we'd stay 15 minutes or so and rest, and they'd give us the milk, and perhaps give us a piece of pie or a piece of cake or something and chatted to us. We found them very charming people. They were very friendly with the Beaver Point people over here. And they were some of the people here.
Tell me about this hotel. Who were the catered to? Who were the drunks that were around there?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. Well, I didn't know the drunks. I don't want to mention names anyway. I'm careful what I say.
No, I don't mean people. I mean were they
mostly
bloggers or fishermen or was it local inhabitants or what? Who would they be?
Everything. Just a mixture of everything. Just a jumble.
I just wonder if the remittance man or whatever they were at the English.
Oh, they probably would have too because we were not there enough to know. We'd just go straight down for the mail and back, you see. Then there was Bob Akerman's grandfather was a fine old man. He told us a lot. And he used to walk up sometimes and see us and stay for an hour or two. The people in the valley used to do that. They'd come up and they'd make a call. They'd come at 10 o'clock in the morning and stay till 5 at night. But nobody in the valley, none of them served afternoon teas or anything like that in those days. The way we served it was quite new to them, quite new. And this old Akerman, Bob Akerman's grandfather, he, before he came to Salt Spring Island, he lived in Victoria. And he had a market garden in Victoria. And where do you think the market garden? Where do you think? Where do you think the market garden was? Where the Parliament buildings now stands. He had a market garden there before he came over to Salt Spring Island.
The old man.
Bob Akerman's grandfather.
He was one of the original inhabitants in the
Antarctica. Oh, no. The Hepburns are here long after us. No, Akerman.
No, I say Akerman was one of the original inhabitants. Oh, yes.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought you said Hepburn. Oh, yes. He was one of the first white, wasn't he? One of the first white. I think there were about three. However, I dare say Bea can tell you more of that than I can because she's studying for this history. And he told us, let me see, how many years was he here before us? Oh, a great many.
63.
Was that it? Just imagine, way over 100 years ago. Of course, the Indians were not very long civilized when we came here, but they were quite friendly. We found them friendly. Then
The Maxwells, remember all the
original? Oh, yes, the Maxwells. Maxwells are here. Mr. Maxwell came from a very fine, very, very aristocratic Irish family, I believe. He married an Indian. And during the First World War, one of the sons over here, he's still living here, Dave Maxwell, he's quite old, he's in his 90s. He went over to Ireland to visit an old aunt there. And he was telling my husband about it. He said she was a fine old lady. She welcomed him well, which I think was very nice of her, don't you? He was fine, and he was delighted to think he'd gone. There was another brother that disappeared in the war. I think he was in the old country. They think he was murdered. I don't know, but you could perhaps see Dave Maxwell. He can give you some, I think.
You remember the original Maxwell, do you?
I've seen him. Yes, I've seen him. I've seen a lot of the original people. But I don't think I knew him, not really, or I knew who he was. Like the old original Mr. Ruckle around here, I remember him. And one day he said something about the sea and the rest of it. I said, oh, yes, it's nice and warm now for swimming. He said, well, you look like the kind of lobster that would enjoy your swim. Lobster. Oh, I'll tell you a funny little thing, too. My youngest brother, he's dead now. He did all these paintings. He went to school, and he was very, very clever, and he picked things up very quickly. Well, at any rate, he gave us all names. My mother was a butterball. She was small, and she used to wear black and white a lot. He called her a little butterball. And he called me a lobster. I had rather a high color, I suppose that was why. And then my oldest sister was going out fishing one day. She had displeased him in some way. And she saw him go kneel down by the sofa and say a prayer. She said, you're saying a prayer? Yes. He said, I fixed you. He said, I asked God to let you catch just a dogfish. Dogfish, nothing else. You're not going to catch any salmon today because you're bad. Well, she came in about 2-3 hours later holding up one dogfish. And so he called her dogfish from then on.
Do you remember the Kanakas, do you?
Oh, yes. I remember the old Bill Hamia. He lived round the corner near Eleanor Point, the mouth of Fulford Harbour. And he came to see us one day. And he brought some samples of his fruit. He wanted to see if he could sell things. And he had such lovely fruit, so we bought all our fruit, etc., and eggs and things from him, I think, for some time till we got our own. And one day, I know we had colds, and so when he came in, my father was giving us all quinine, horrible stuff. And so he said, well, he said, I want some. So he gave him a tablespoonful of this horrible tasting quinine. And then we gave him a cup of tea to take the taste out after, you see. No, he didn't want it. He said it was nice. He liked it. It was good.
Well, how did the Kanakas earn their living? What were they doing?
Fishing chiefly. Fishing or farming. Some of them had farms. Mostly fishing. Just fishermen.
I suppose they used their own language, but they must be Chinese.
Well, they spoke English when we were here. I don't know what they used before we came, but there was English. We understood them all when they came here.
Did they sing a lot?
Very musical, yes. They're very musical.
Would they do this solo, or would you hear them all together singing it? How would it be?
Oh, we generally, because we didn't go to anything much, and we didn't congregate. We were not allowed to mix with people very much. I suppose we were too far away, for one thing. And they would eat up and down in the boat. It used to be so nice to hear them. Then there was sometimes some of them could yodel. You can imagine how nice that sounded on a clear evening, yodeling the sounds coming over the water. They'd go out dig clams, and you would hear them singing while they're digging clams. I remember all the alumnus once hearing them singing up, and I wonder who's kissing her now. Oh, it sounded awfully nice in the moonlight night digging clams, you know. Oh, yes, and my sister was mentioning to you about the fires they had to dig clams by. They would collect the pitch from trees and things like that, and pitchy wood, and they cut the tops off the old coal oil tins, which were 4-gallon tins. Perhaps you don't know them, but in those days we bought our coal oil in 4-gallon tins. They'd cut the tops out, and they'd put a wire in for a handle, and they'd put their pitch and stuff in this, and they would light that and have them periodically right along the beach just so they could see to dig their clams. And when the HMS Egeria that I spoke of before was in here, they happened to be doing that at one time, the low tides at night. And so they came in and they said, what is all the illumination we saw out here? So we told them, we thought that perhaps you were celebrating somebody's birthday or something special going on. We thought it was pretty.
Is it the Kanakas or the Indians?
Oh, all together, all mixed in. They sort of got mixed in, I think, now, but they were mostly Kanakas. Yeah. Kanakas really, I think, are the finer of the two lots. These have fine qualities.
What was this about the owls? Who kissed the owls? Is the song that they sang?
The owls. Who's kissing her now? I wonder who's kissing her now. Yeah, that came beautifully over this. It was the first time I'd ever heard it. And I could hear this and all sorts of different songs in those days. Because the music, the songs in those days, they made more sense, I think, than they do nowadays, a lot of them. There was more words to them anyway.
Would the Kanakas sing their own songs, their own...
Oh, possibly. I don't know all they were singing. Possibly.
Would they sound sort of Hawaiian, some of them?
Oh, yes, we'd hear Hawaiian music. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And hear on their different musical instruments, lovely Hawaiian music. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, and sometimes when they'd have a concert up in the schoolhouse, as I mentioned before, they would come and each do their bit, and they'd sing and dance and do their bit of on their string instruments, you see. Oh, yes, they would. Very nice it was, too.
They do their Hawaiian dances, too.
Oh, not so much. Not so much then. They should have got them. I suppose nobody thought to ask them to do that. In those days. Possibly nowadays they would. But some of them were very good at step dancing and things like that. And that was quite something in those days. There wasn't so much of that. And they danced beautifully. The darkies danced beautifully, too.
They would come down, too, to the concert.
Anybody. Everybody and anybody. We were not allowed to the mixed dances when we were young. Not until the First World War. Then we could mix with other people. We're not allowed to mix with people before that. Well, I don't know why, I suppose, but my people were old country, and I suppose they were very strict the way they were brought up in the old country. We had to be brought up the same way. But we were always friendly with everybody.
Was there a road between north and south?
Yes.
When you got here?
Yes. But it went over the hill, right over the Divide Hill, as they called it. And that was cut out to the side of the hill, you see. It was very steep at the bottom of the road and then steep below in some parts. It was quite a long hill. I've been in three runways down that. One was, my father and mother went with Bob Aiken's father. They put hay in the wagon, and I and some friends sat in the back of the wagon. And coming home from this fall fair, the Farmers Institute fall fair, the horses ran away, the team. And we behind were laughing and enjoying it. When we got down, they said, oh, they seemed to enjoy it, but we didn't. They didn't know. They thought they were going over the bank every second. We didn't know a thing about it. And the second time I was in a runaway coming down there was some people that lived near Blackburn's Lake. Their name was Blackburn. I was walking home from Ganges Harbour, and Mr. Blackburn stopped and asked me if I would like to have a lift as far as their place. In this little two-seater and one horse, you know. And coming down the hill, the horse ran away. And it was all he could do to hold that horse in. It went near the edge, you know, just like this, you know, all the way around. And when we got to the foot of the hill, it turned around on one wheel. The horse wanted to get home. And so I said, oh, I could see he couldn't stop the horse. I said, when he could, I said, I'd better get out because he's only taking me further away from home. He said, you're coming home with me. So he took me into his wife, and he said, I brought a very brave young lady in here. He told what happened. He said, she kept quiet the whole way. I always keep quiet. I never thought of making a fuss. And the third time was the worst. I had a stiff wheel bicycle that I'd bought for $5 from some of the Croftons. And I was coming home from Ganges Harbour, and as I came down that hill, my brake gave way. There was no pedals, it was just a stiff wheel. I don't know how I stayed on that bicycle, and I was only lucky that I met no vehicle or nothing on the road. But here I was somehow like this, I think like this all the way down. And there were several rolling hills after that, like that. And as I came down, I went whoosh, up that hill and down, whoosh, through about three hills. Then I saw a wagon load of hay coming. And the roads were very narrow then, you know. You couldn't pass. I couldn't have passed that big hay thing on my bicycle. So I had to half tumble and half jump off my bicycle into the side, into the brush, into the fern. And all I had from it was a scrape down my leg and almost absolute exhaustion. So I sat down there for a bit, and the man stopped and asked if I was all right. So I told him what had happened. I said, yes, I'll just rest here till I can go on. So those were my three adventures down the Divide Hill. And then I went to work during the First World War in Vancouver.
And that comes, it's really before the war.
Yes, yes.
I wonder if I could ask you, what do you remember about the Ruckles out there?
The Ruckles? The Ruckles were... we looked up to them. We thought they were very fine, some of the finest people around here. We didn't meet them very often. I hadn't been to their place for many years, and we went by water. They were farming. There was old Mr. and Mrs. Ruckle. Old Mrs. Ruckle, she was very, very religious. I think she was a sort of an army girl, you know. Very religious. She didn't like her people to have any ornaments or frills of any kind. But a very fine woman, very fine, fine people. All I can say is to just speak the very highest of them all.
You remember the Stevens out there?
Yes.
They
yes.
Were quite a family.
Yes, yes. Well, I can say the same of them. Yes.
Did Mr. Bullock ever come down this end of the island?
Oh, yes. We were great friends. He used to come down, yes. Oh, it was funny. He'd been to see us several times, and this is something rather funny. He came down one day, and we had a little drawing room there, of course, you know, all beautiful, done up, beautiful colors and all the best things in it. And he was having tea. We made tea and took in. And my mother came out with two little jewel boxes, a pair of earrings for me and a pair for my older sister, and the little rings you put in when the ears are pierced. So I said, oh, but Mama, we can't accept those. Why not? I said, you've taught us that we must never accept a jewelry or a gift from a man unless it's a book or a flowers, unless we're engaged to him. I said, I'm not going to be engaged to him. So mother said, well, this is all right. You didn't accept it from me. We've accepted it for you, so it's all right. So we were delighted. So then the awful thing was, they said, well, we could go to a jeweler or a doctor and have our ears pierced, or they could put a darning needle through. So my father got a darning needle, and he sterilized it, and he put a darning needle through my ear. I fainted. And so I came to, and he said, well, are you ready to have the other done? I didn't want to. I thought, oh, dear. Then I thought of those beautiful earrings with real jewels in, such beautiful earrings. And I thought, all right, do it. So I had my other ear pierced. Then we wore these little gold ones, you know, little rings till it heals up. You turn them around every day to make sure. But, oh, one of my ears was so sore, it swelled up. Oh, I could poison it. It was so sore. I wouldn't go through it again. Fancy having a darning needle put through your ear. And then a second one. We used to go to his dances. You know, these before the First World War, we were growing up, you see, and he would send out these informal, these very formal invitations, RSVP. We'd have to wear our proper evening dresses and our evening gloves and our evening fans. I still have some of them. I still got my fans. And sometimes he'd give dinner parties or luncheon parties. They were just something. He had this, have you seen his house? You didn't see it before it was burnt. Oh, it was a beautiful house. Big thing, a great huge hallway with stairs up, wide stairs up to the top and then branching off. And on one side of this hallway was a great huge drawing room, which was cleared out for the dance. And the other side was a dining room with a great long, long table. And he used to give these dinner parties.
What was the kind of people he used to have waiting on him?
Mr. The first button I remember that he had was Mr. Bond, Jesse Bond. He's still on the arm. They're farmers up there. You should see him. Yes, and he was a nice boy, very slim, he's still slim, with his buttons down each side. He'd stand behind Mr. Bullock's chair, and we'd be there, and some of my brothers would try to make him laugh. And poor boy, what agony it was. Sometimes he'd try to laugh, but couldn't be allowed to, you know. And these wretched brothers, they'd do all they could start him laughing. Oh, but Mr. Bullock was a fine old gentleman. He had his fads. He used to tell us how he liked to see the girls dress. They had to have 18-inch waists. Well, I couldn't get below 22. It was the smallest I could make mine. And he wanted high-heeled shoes, 5 inches high, which was very high in those days. He liked them to have earrings and a veil. Oh, yes, gloves. He used to give us gloves every now and again. Well, I thought I could accept gloves from him if my mother had allowed me to accept the earrings. So we had gloves now and again. Beautiful things. Oh, he was awfully good, too. Awfully good. Then afterwards, when we were growing up, he had the younger girls to do the same for them, which was very nice. Oh, yes, that big clock in there was one of our wedding presents from him. He gave us that and 2 beautiful chairs.
What was this about the dresses that he used to keep in his house?
The dresses?
He used to keep 2 evening dresses in his house.
I didn't know that. In case nobody had one? In case somebody didn't have one?
Yes, in case any lady was calling and didn't have an evening dress, he had these 2 dresses in his house, and they stayed there for years and years and got molded.
I wonder what sizes they were. Oh, well, he wouldn't have to introduce that to them. We always had our own.
The 18-inch waist, anyhow.
Well, it wouldn't have done for me.
No.
No.
He was quite a character. Did he go to church with his...
Oh, yes, his silk hat. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, his silk hat. And I remember Mrs. Wilson, the Crofton's grandmother, telling my mother, she told us about it, that there were some people living opposite the Wilson place, the place that Beth Wood has now bought. You know Beth Wood, the former mayor of New Westminster? She's bought that place now. Well, there were some people living there that the Wilsons didn't consider quite, you know, how they quite like themselves, you know, how snobbish they were in those old days. And one day, Mr. Bullock came and asked Mrs. Wilson if he would supply Eton suits and silk hats for the 2 boys, Norman and Keith, his 2 younger sons. Would they let them wear them to church? So they finally got persuaded, all right, they thought it'd be all right. So they wore these Eton suits and silk hats to church. And then one day, the boys opposite, which were considered quite a bit lower down on the scale, came out in the same. They were so horrified, I think they sent the Eton suits and hats back to Mr. Bullock. I suppose I shouldn't have said things like that because they've got relations up there. Perhaps you better cut that piece out.
I don't think there's anything wrong in that at all. I think that's the old days. That's not
the yes, that's the old days.
But he used to have his own boys, the house boys, didn't he?
Yes. Oh, yes.
He had them dressed up, didn't he?
Oh, in buttons.
And he had to take them to a church. He had them in Eton suits too.
Oh, possibly. I don't know. I don't remember that.
Yes, we heard he did that.
Oh, possibly. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I dare say he was awfully good to his boys.
Yeah.
Because Willie Palmer, he's one of the boys that used to work. No, he wasn't with Buttons, but his mother was housekeeper.
Yeah.
And a very, very fine lady she was, too. We used to go and see her sometimes. She had her own sitting room, her own pass. And she used to entertain us in her own quarters quite often. We used to go camping sometimes. Mr. Bullock said, well, he'd got a dance coming off or a dinner or something. He'd like us to go. And so he'd invite us to take a little cottage he had for a week. We'd stay up there, and everybody was awfully nice to us. We had a good time. Then we were able to go to these dances or parties or whatever it was he had. We enjoyed them. There'd generally be about three or four things through the winter months up at Ganges we went to, because there was nothing down here. There was nobody of that kind down here in those days. So lots of people now, it's very different. They won't put a quarter of it in. They used to make most of the canoes, though.
Okay. Tell us this.
Well, going back to when we gave old Bill Hamiel the quinine, we didn't know at the time, when we were giving him quinine and tea, etc., etc., that we were entertaining a cannibal. He had been a cannibal in the old days before they were civilized. It was just that, but I didn't know if I should have told you.
There's something you mentioned, and I was speaking over the top.
Yes.
You were talking about, just briefly, about the Indians and the Kanakas.
Yes.
The different qualities in both. What was it you said then at that time? You felt in relation to the Kanakas, in relation to the Indians.
Yes. Oh, they were very much the same, I think. But I think we sort of... no, I don't like to say it.
You don't like to say it?
No.
Okay. I was speaking while you said
it. You have to be so careful.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't really something that we would
No.
A lot of these things are...
Mm-hmm. No. We don't want to hurt anybody.
No. Of course, it was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's it. We have to think of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to catch yourself up now and again.
Yeah.
That's true.
Finish up to your grandfather.
About ours?
Yeah.
Well, what about him?
Archdeacon
of London. Oh, yes, he was. I don't know if they want to know.
Who was your grandfather?
Archdeacon Hamilton of Londonderry, Ireland. Yes. That's one view of his wife's father's home. He was General Hart of Kildare in Ireland. And that's one view of it. And the other view is like a beautiful garden. That's called Redfern, I think, isn't it? That's a painting from it, anyway.
What did your father call this house here?
Dromore. Dromore. Named after my grandfather's estate in Ireland. He had an estate there with a river running through it, about 100 acres. A fishing... And Dromore, Dromore, in Ireland, means a high hill. But it was named after his place, anyway. We had a place over there that we called Rathmore, and that meant a strong fortress in Ireland, but we sold it.
Did you have any other kids that you played with other than your own family?
Not when we were young. There was nobody near enough. We were not allowed all those. No, we didn't. No.
You were really quite isolated.
We were, and we missed them, because when we were at Oak Bay, we had so many. Yes, we were lonely at times just at first, but of course things soon improved and changed. But most of the friends we had were people much older than us. The people that now like the Wilson family down there. They were very nice, those Wilsons. And some of the Ruckers we'd meet now and again, but we were friendly with them. But they were too far away, you see, to see much of each other.
If you went to Victoria in those days, by what way would you go?
Oh, we just have to come on the boat. It'd be one boat a week from Victoria and one from Vancouver. It's the only way. Unless we went... by our own boat, sailboat, to Sydney and took the train. They could always do it that way. But that was quite a journey. It was all right in fine weather.
It could be very rough.
Yes. Oh, yes, we've been in some quite rough. I remember one, we were sailing our boat over to Sydney. My father wanted to go to Victoria. And so my two older brothers and I went with him. We sailed the boat over there. And when we got round, it's oftentimes when it's calm in this harbour, when you get to the mouth, it's rough. And you notice it especially in a small boat. And I suppose my father was a bit, perhaps a little nervous, more service, and we were more venturesome than he was, perhaps being younger. It got quite rough, and we wanted to take in the reef. You know, we had two reefs, we could shorten sail. And they left it too long. The winds got so strong, we couldn't. So we just had to let it go, and so we held there. And did we fly across that? We didn't ship any water, but ooh, it was flying out, and we flew across that little gap between Isabella Point and Piers Island in just no time. We had a lovely sail. And my father was so nervous and the rest of it. And so we were like, he said, "Oh, there's no laughing matter, you know, no laughing matter." He said, "This is just getting rougher." And so I was still laughing. I said, "Oh, I wish Mr. X was here." You know, I was the same man I was talking before. "What do you want him here for?" I said, "So that he could pray for us." You know, he was so one of these kind. So they could pray for us, I remember that. But coming back, the wind had changed. And did we have a lovely sail back? My father had gone, the two brothers and I, we had a beautiful sail back. Why, it was lovely. The wind had changed and we were able to sail back without tacking. It was just beautiful. We've had lots of adventures in the sea.